Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Kevin! You're stupid.
Hey, friends, welcome to episode 297 of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast. I am your host, Kevin Huntsberger, and full disclosure, this is take two. I had recorded a podcast outside by the pool. It was a nice day in between storms here in Southern Illinois, recording on the Sunday before Memorial Day. And as we are dropping this episode on Memorial Day, be sure to take a moment to reflect and remember those men and women who are no longer here with us, who have served our country and made it what it is today, given us the opportunities and the freedoms that we enjoy so much. So again, remember those who are no longer with us as part of your Memorial Day festivities. I do want to thank you, though, for being a part of, whether you're watching or listening on your favorite podcasting app. Be sure to leave a review. Let me know what you think of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast, the YouTube videos. I debated what topic to go with because I had several. I was going to do just a random wrestling thoughts and kind of look at the Sasha Banks or the Mercedes Moné situation. She recently came out and said that she feels like she's the greatest women's wrestler of all time, and people, for whatever reason, are losing their minds over this. And I did not see or hear the direct quote. I got to think that this is part of the marketing, the promotion. This is, you talk about yourself like you're better than sliced bread. And so for people to get upset and angry and worked up about that, you know, Sasha Banks, Mercedes Moné, neither one, you know, neither character resonated with me. I'm not high on her as a performer, and she's good, but I wouldn't even have her in my top 10 of all-time favorite women. And I certainly wouldn't have her in my top 10 of the best. And I've talked before about how the best versus favorite are two obviously very different things. But for me, Mercedes Moné isn't even in the area code for that. So anyway, I decided not to do that podcast or those random thoughts. I'd also thought about reflecting on the 25-year anniversary of Owen Hart's death, which happened just a couple of days ago. I realized that I had not done a podcast on Owen Hart in the almost 10 years of this podcast. I have done several videos, though, so if you are watching, if you're not watching, check out the YouTube channel and go back and look. I did one just a couple, maybe a year or two ago, about Owen Hart and whether he would have eventually become WWE champion, which I am inclined to think that he would have. So it was a big weekend in wrestling as well, and I've thought about talking about some of those things, King and Queen of the Ring. I'm satisfied with the results of that. Not a big Nia Jax fan, but kind of expected to see the tournament end in that way. Gunther is the King of the Ring. I watched part of the show. I didn't watch all of it, but I was impressed with what I saw. Saw part of the Intercontinental Championship match, the women's title match between Becky Lynch and Liv Morgan. I am loving the story, and I cannot wait for Rhea Ripley to return. And it's going to be, I think it's going to be epic. I think it's going to be epic. So looking forward to that. And then, you know, of course, it's all-in weekend as well. As I'm reporting this, we're a couple of hours away from that starting. Chad's actually in Las Vegas right now, and I don't know if he's going to make it to the show. I know he was doing some other things while he's in Vegas, so I'll be curious if he does end up going, hearing his perspective. But it should be a lot of talk of the wrestling community next week of all-in and King and Queen of the Ring. So I don't want to focus on the things that everyone else is talking about. So I'm definitely going to be talking about something in this week's episode that nobody else, and I literally mean nobody else, will be talking about. And that's me. But it's not just me. It is about independent wrestling here in Southern Illinois, specifically Stride Pro Wrestling, and very more specifically, as we are recording this on May 26th, it is the 6-year anniversary of my first match in Stride Pro Wrestling, my first match inside a steel cage, my only match inside a steel cage, and kind of what led us to that, and the aftermath, the fallout, and all that good stuff. So I'm going to set the table from the very beginning, and I just did this 10 minutes ago with the first podcast that I recorded, that apparently the microphone was not working on the audio. I recorded it outside and on a different device, so I was relying on a microphone that I probably should have made sure was fully charged before I started, but I didn't, and I digress. But anyway, for those who remember and know, you know, I've been a lifelong wrestling fan, starting at about age 10. And fortunately, growing up in St. Louis, there were many options in terms of TV, of watching, and then, you know, the WWF, Wrestling at the Chase, which Wrestling at the Chase was kind of going away by the time I really became a big time fan. And by the time I started going to shows, Wrestling at the Chase was off the air. But then there was, you know, Jim Crockett Promotions, there was Central States, and the NWA promoted shows in St. Louis, Sam Munchnick and whatnot. And so we would get to go and see WWF at the arena. And then we would go see, and I, you know, Ric Flair was always there, and he would defend the NWA championship. And it wasn't, I don't think it was necessarily a quote unquote NWA show, but it was at the Kiel Auditorium, which is now, I think, called the Enterprise Center. Anyway, it was always a big deal. And getting to go and see those matches as well. You know, I saw Kerry Von Erich and Bruiser Brody and Wahoo McDaniel, and an early age Scott Hall, The Missing Link, Ric Flair, of course. So those matches were always fun and great to go to, because they weren't quite the same as going to those WWF shows back in, you know, 84, 85, 86, when I would go pretty, we didn't go all the time, but we went many times, more so than I think a lot of kids my age were able to go, and so I'm very fortunate and grateful for that. So I say all that to say is I grew up, for the most part, kind of almost becoming a bit of a loner. You know, when we were little kids, you know, early junior high school, more people were watching and talking about it, and I had those friends to talk to it about. In high school, people kind of outgrew it a little bit and stopped watching, or weren't watching it as much, or, you know, wasn't going to the shows anymore. But I was still watching, like, weekly, as much as I could get, buying the magazines and all that good stuff. And so staying up to date with it. But I didn't have, like, quote-unquote wrestling friends. And then college, kind of the same thing. My buddy and I, my senior year in high school, my buddy Jim and I did go to Starrcade 90. And we did watch some of those WWF pay-per-views, you know, WrestleMania, SummerSlam. They had the big satellite dish in their yard. But we weren't watching stuff. You know, we weren't watching it. You know, it was more of a, he was more of a paper, I think kind of more of a bigger show viewer than a regular consistent viewer. We did go to a couple shows when we moved to Cape Girardeau when we were in college. We went to college together. We went to some shows. I drug my wife then to shows. She wasn't my wife at the time. We were just dating, but I would take her to the shows because she would go, because I guess she probably felt sorry for me. She did not like wrestling and still does not like wrestling, but she would go and support. I really didn't, in college, didn't have wrestling friends at all. And then even as an adult, you know, in the workplace, there were some people here and there when I worked in Alabama that were into wrestling, but again, it was very inconsistent. And then I'm sorry, Indiana was the same thing. Then I moved to Southern Illinois in 2004, and I met Chad, and he was a big time wrestling fan, and so he introduced me to things like TNA. He was getting those weekly pay-per-views, Ring of Honor, Chikara Pro, and then of course independent wrestling, local independent wrestling, All American Pro Wrestling, and some other shows that were running around here. And I've talked more about that in previous episodes. But anyway, he kind of introduced me to that independent scene that I quickly fell in love with, and was became very fortunate then, after about 6 or 7 years of living here, Chris Hagstrom, who was teaching a class over at SIU, Southern Illinois University, film production class or video production class, he wanted to put together a wrestling show. And because I was working at WSIL and he knew that I was a wrestling fan, we were not really friends. We were Facebook friends more than anything. But he had asked me if I would be willing to record a pilot episode of Pro Wrestling Collision. I'm sorry, All American Pro Wrestling. The show was going to be called Collision, AAPW Collision. So yeah, I agreed, and I did it, and it ended up going on the air. It was airing every other Saturday, and in the build up for that show, and kind of to get some more eyeballs on it, I was asked to be involved beyond just being a commentator for the show, but I was asked to step in the ring and have a match, and I was very reluctant. I'm not trained. I'm not athletic. At that time, I was 39, which I thought was old, and I'm like, I don't see the value in me as a commentator getting in the ring and wrestling. But in the back of my head too, I was very interested, and I wanted to do it, but I didn't think I should do it. Well, they talked me into it. We end up doing the angle, you know, building it up to where Mike Masters, who I ended up wrestling, was on the morning show, the WSIL TV show that I was co-anchoring at the time. Heath Hatton's there. Heath gets in a shoving match with Mike. Mike gets a chair, goes to hit Heath with it. I pull it away and I end up whacking Masters with it, and Heath throws him off the set. And so that kind of planted the seed then for what would eventually become a match between myself and Mike Masters. And again, 2012, January of 2012, it happens. I win. And then we all kind of go back to our normal lives, and Masters eventually wins the AAPW Heavyweight Championship, and we spend the next year promoting AAPW. I'm back to commentating, and no interest, no desire to wrestle again. Even though I had fun, I didn't, you know, I was content on what I was doing. Well, then, the end of 2012, AAPW comes to a close, and Chris and Adam Testa decide to move forward with a new promotion called Pro Wrestling Collision. And so again, I'm tasked with the commentary, but I knew that there was going to be no wrestling involved with this for me. And so we spent about 4 or 5 months with Collision before May of 2013, it ends up coming to an early end. And so, and I can't say that I was disappointed or sad to see it end. Those days were just, even with AAPW, they were very long days. It was setting up, it was doing the TV stuff, it was getting everything ready for that. It was much different than a traditional independent wrestling spot show or show, because you know, you set up, you have the show, and you tear down. Well, with AAPW and with Collision, it was set up, then set up the TV stuff, and then record, you know, do all the pre-recording and all that stuff, and then have the matches. And then if you had to record any post-match angle stuff, we would record that. Not very often did we have to do that. It was usually all done in pre-production, and then or before the show, and then tear down. And then we didn't have a place that we were storing, you know, like we weren't leaving the ring in that building. So then we had to take the ring to then the storage place and then unload that at the trailer to that. It was just I'm not exaggerating, 8 a.m. day start. And usually 11:30, 12 o'clock, 12:30 in the morning, wrapping up, and then going and grabbing something to eat at Steak and Shake afterward. Gosh, they were just long days. And anyway, you know, 2013 rolled around, and Collision comes to an end in May, and I didn't do anything in the wrestling space locally for almost three years. And it was in January of 2016, Tyler Hatton and I had kept in touch, and we're still communicating and talking, seeing each other every once in a while at different events and whatnot. And we started working out together. He's obviously a trainer and in shape and knows what he's talking about. And so I was middle-aged and trying to get into shape. And so we were meeting at the gym, at Gold's Gym, and he was, you know, helping me work out and come up with a plan and all that good stuff. And I remember one day he said to me that he was thinking about starting, or he was going to start a wrestling school. And, you know, part of that school, he was going to do shows. And if he was going to do the shows, he wanted to know if I would be interested in doing the ring announcing. Wasn't going to be TV. We didn't have cameras or anything elaborate like Chris had with AAPW. And so I was like, yeah, absolutely. I would love to be a part of it and help and do what I can. And so we were set up in the old mall in Marion, Illinois. And the beauty of that was with the training school, we could leave everything kind of set up and there. So it wasn't having to put things up on the day of the show and then tearing things down. It was all in place. Sometimes we'd have to shift and move things around, but it was not nearly as cumbersome as it was with AEPW. And so we did that for, gosh, we were in that location. We ended up moving to a couple of different spots in the mall because the mall, if you live in Southern Illinois, you know, the mall in Marion was dying a slow death. And so we would move to different spaces that we could get into and rent. And so I think we were in there for probably about 2.5 years before we ended up moving to our building in Carterville, Illinois. But anyway, I'm saying all that to say somewhere along the way, when we were still in the mall, Tyler had approached me about having another match. And I was reluctant, honestly, but because now I'm, you know, by this point, I'm what, 6 years older, almost 6 years older than I was from the first match. And I wasn't sure. I was in my mid-40s, and he, you know, talked to me and convinced me that it would be good. And but it was going to be against Farmer Billy Hills, who was turning heel at the time. And we did a whole thing to kind of set it up, and Farmer ended up getting hurt in another match. And so I thought we were going to just put it on delay and just wait for him to come back. Well, Tyler, in the meantime, had said, nah, I think we're going to refocus you against Roger Mathis. And I'm like, there's no way. There is no way Roger is going to want to work with me, because Tyler had also said, you know, that I was going to go over in the process. And I said, Roger is this 285-pound monster of a man. He's, you know, martial arts. He's a veteran. He's legit badass. Could kill you with, you know, looking at you. And Roger and I were not, like, he was not somebody, I am very introverted. And so I kind of naturally gravitated toward the guys that I had known from AAPW. So Axe Allward and Farmer Billy Hills and Tyler, those are the guys that I'm, Jay Spade, you know, are talking to and hanging out with backstage. And so I never really connected with Roger, I didn't feel like, until we kind of started building up to this match. And part of that match, to build to get to it, because why would a 200-pound geeky news anchor, ring announcer, want to be involved in a match with a 285-pound man who I just established could, you know, intimidate anybody, you know, could have his way and brutalize anybody, you know, who's former champion. He was this big mountain of a man. And so to do that, we involved my daughter. Well, the original idea that Tyler had was for one of my sons to be, you know, be beaten up, roughed up by Roger. Well, my boy's 18. One of them was 18. One of them was 16 at the time. They were typical teenage boys. They did not, and they were not wrestling fans. My middle son was when he was little, but he kind of outgrew it. did not want to be involved. My daughter had been watching some wrestling with me. She wasn't overly zealous about doing it, but my wife, in order for my wife to avoid being the victim of Roger, kind of said, hey, how about Brooke? Who was athletic, a cheerleader, had, you know, gotten hit in the face and punched and kicked, and not intentionally, but just bruises and banged up from cheerleading, which later in her senior year got really banged up in with her eye. But anyway, I knew that she would be able to handle whatever it was, because it was not going to be anything overly complicated. It was going to be a power slam. And so we did the angle on May 5th. But along the way, we had been building up to this with me costing, you know, Roger had kind of grabbed me and pushed me around and was trying to beat me up, and Bull Bronson had saved me, and then Cash Borden had saved me, and then I hit Roger with a chair at our April show of 2018. And then on May 5th is when he plucks my daughter out of the crowd, gives her a power slam. And this is before we started recording. COVID happened a couple years later, and we started recording all the AAPW, all the Stride shows to put on to YouTube. This was before that, but Tyler's wife, Rachel, had recorded the thing with Roger. And so that's on my TikTok. It's on my YouTube, so you can check that out. But anyway, he does the power slam. I sign the paper, and yada, 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 run her out of the ring. And we sell it, and people, you know, people legitimately, even family and friends who I said, hey, this is going to happen, still thought that she was hurt, because I was going to post on Facebook about it and let, you know, kind of I'm not going to let this go unmatched or whatever. And so it ended up becoming a big deal, because we had a couple weeks still build up, because this happened May 5th. And then on the 26th, we're doing this show called Stride Goes Steel in the Ville. We were in Pinckneyville, Illinois, as a fundraiser. And so we were building up to that. And so, of course, along the way, I've never been in a steel cage. And along the way, I find out, not only is it in a steel cage, but we're going to be the main event. We're closing the show. So that was an extreme honor. And again, I'm grateful for Tyler and for Roger and everyone else who was involved, and everyone else who kind of took and let this middle-aged anchor man and ring announcer be a part of such a big event and closing out the show. It's still, to this day, 6 years later, it blows my mind that is what happened, and that's how things went down. So we build up to it. We get there, kind of going over things. You know, Tyler had sent a detailed kind of spot list of things that we were going to do. One thing they wanted to do was the electric chair. And if you're not familiar with that, which I think if you're a wrestling fan, you are, but anyway, the electric chair is where one opponent is sitting on the other opponent's shoulders and drop backwards. And so I was that was the one thing of the match that I was the most nervous about and scared about doing, because I was not sure how to do it. And we did it with a crash pad practicing earlier on in the day. And I'm probably letting too much out of the bag, but I think all these other wrestling podcasts have made it clear that, you know, they've shown you how the sausage is made, so to speak. So anyway, we practiced it a couple of times, and I was not comfortable with it, but I'm like, okay, we can do this. Well, we get into the match, and I can still remember, and I wish there was video, and I think there may be videos floating around somewhere, but Roger's entrance, you know, I came out first, and then Roger's entrance, some of the band kids played these drums. Like, Roger's this Viking warrior type of, you know, asker, and they played the solo drum beat, and then it kind of built up, and it was dark, and the light, the way it just looked, the visual was amazing. And I can remember being in the ring and, like, legitimately goosebumps and the nerves hit, because I'm like, here I am in this cage, where the main event, my parents have come down, some friends of theirs had come down with their granddaughter, my friends, my non-wrestling fan friends were there, my wife was there, my daughter did not want to come, she was supposed to be a part of the end of the match, but she didn't want to do it, and so we didn't push it, and so it was just kind of this surreal experience. Then we get into the match, and we're doing it, and one of the first spots is this electric chair. I'm supposed to try to escape the cage, so I'm climbing up the cage, and he grabs me and I'm on his shoulders and he falls back. And of course, my instinct, even though 20 people told me not to do it, they said, don't put your arm out. I put my arm out. I can't believe I didn't break my wrist that night in this matchup. So anyway, the match goes on. I'm, you know, getting my ass kicked. I had a couple spots where I was doing all right. I did a high cross body off the top, which climbing the top rope was something I would have never, ever, ever, ever attempted. But because it's in a cage, I could prop myself up and had balance and was confident and capable to do that. But traditionally speaking, no, I would not have done that. So anyway, I come off the top and I put him in the figure four. And I think I might have body slammed him or hip tossed him or done some spots. But he dominated most of the match, kicked me a couple of times where I felt like I was losing all the oxygen that was left in my body. I mean, you know, it was a great match. It was, you know, from my perspective, I've not obviously gone back and watched it, but just seeing the pictures and stuff. And it was just a cool moment, a cool part of my fandom coming to life, you know, as a 12-year-old, a 13-year-old dreaming of getting in the ring and kicking someone's ass and knowing though that the reality, I'm not athletic, was not blessed with that. And I, at an early age, thought I could be a manager or I could be a ring announcer or a commentator. So those were kind of my goals. So then when I got to do all of those things and referee, I've literally been able to do all of it. And so I'm so grateful again to Heath, to Tyler, that is, and Chris Hagstrom and to everyone else along the way, Roger, especially for this match in particular. Match ends up ending with my friend Tom climbing, scaling the cage, coming in to save me. And the process, he gets kind of beat up and knocked around. And then that prompts Cash Borden to come out, who was in a feud with Roger at the time as well. Cash comes in with a taser, zaps Roger, letting me escape the cage. And so that's how that ends. The fans, of course, go wild. It's the main event. They're going to go home happy. The news anchor, the underdog wins. And so I thought it was awesome. It was cool. It was very cool. It was a great, in my mind, a great second match and final match. This is over. And as we know, it's not over. And we'll talk about those other things at another time. But if you're watching, you see it. But if you're listening, I am holding up the October 2018 issue of Pro Wrestling Illustrated. Now, when I was a kid, this was the wrestling fan's Bible. We would go, my parents would take me and my brother up to, it was called, we called it the drugstore. It was just a little mom and pop place in High Ridge, Missouri, the top of a hill on the other side of our subdivision. When we were, you know, during the summers, we'd ride our bikes up there and buy soda and candy and Garbage Pail Kids and wrestling magazines. And so that was the thing. Every month we would go and I would get Pro Wrestling Illustrated for sure. And then sometimes I would get, because Pro Wrestling Illustrated was the only one that had like the color centerfold and it was a bit slicker than The Wrestler or Inside Wrestling. But I would get those from time to time. But I would thumb through, read the magazine articles, look at the pictures, the recaps, the articles, the columns, all that stuff, hang the poster up on my wall. And I was a happy kid. And so Mike Bessler, who was a friend through Adam Testo, who was associated with AAPW and Pro Wrestling Collision, Mike writes for Pro Wrestling Illustrated, and he had reached out to me after this match and said, hey, you know, would you send me some information? We would love to do feature you in the magazine. And I could not believe it because AAPW had gotten a mention before in the indie wrap-up or the indie roundup. And so sure enough, on page 64, the independent roundup, you see me right there, me and Tom. This is after the match. I'm dressed in more casual clothes. I did wear that t-shirt and I had on a pair of jeans when I wrestled and boots, trying to be a tough guy, trying to be Billy Badass, which did not work. But I'm going to read to you what Mike wrote, because it again, to be immortalized in this magazine means the world to me. And I am, you know, 13-year-old me is like, God, man, I can't believe that. That's awesome. And 51-year-old me is still feeling that way. So, independent roundup by Mike Bessler. First article, too, by the way, or first entry in the independent roundup. Like most television newscasters, Kevin Huntsberger is accustomed to reporting the news rather than being part of the story. But on May 26th, the morning anchorman from WSIL-TV in Southern Illinois found himself in the midst of a buzzworthy drama unfolding inside of a steel cage. Huntsberger, who moonlights as a ring announcer for Stride Pro Wrestling, had been stalked for months by former heavyweight champ Roger Mathis and was finally goaded into a cage match by the big man when he subjected Huntsberger's 12-year-old daughter Brooke to a power slam at a Stride Pro show several weeks prior. Fans likely expected the wiry 6'1", 197-pound, I'm hoping to get back there someday, Huntsberger to suffer a drubbing, especially considering the 6'3", 285-pound Mad Viking has punished opponents for a dozen years in the ring. Indeed, in the early moments of the bout, Mathis seemed poised to bully his way to a win, but Huntsberger found some support from the audience as well as from behind the curtain. Huntsberger's best friend Tom Harness, who was in attendance to cheer on his pal, stormed the ring area first, climbing the cage and attacking Mathis with a broom. But Mathis quickly gained the upper hand on both men, prompting Cash Borden to emerge from the locker room and take out Mathis once and for all with a taser. With his opponent incapacitated, Kevin Huntsberger escaped the cage to win the bout. Huntsberger knew what was at stake, but he felt that he would have failed his daughter if he did nothing. And this is a quote from me. After we took Brooke to the doctor for her regularly scheduled appointment, and he told us that she was fine, I asked her what she thought about me being in the impending match. And she told me, quote, "I don't want you to get hurt, but Roger is a bully. He deserves to pay." When I knew she was okay, I put my own fear aside and wanted nothing but revenge. And so that's how we built up to that match. A father, what father wouldn't want revenge, no matter how big the odds. And again, of course, with the benefit of wrestling storytelling, you can take that 197-pound, wiry 6'1", against a 6'3", 285-pound Viking madman and make something out of it. So again, and I express this all the time, but I want to just drive it home one more time. I am thankful and grateful for all the opportunities that I've had in independent wrestling, whether it was ring announcing, whether it was being a referee, whether it was commentary, or especially getting in and being in the ring. I'm not even going to say wrestling, because what I was doing was far from what the trained professionals are there to do. But I am thankful and grateful to all who gave me those opportunities and those chances to live out a dream. And who's to say that it doesn't happen down the road? But for now, I am happily retired from the world of independent wrestling. But I encourage you to support wrestling in your area, whether it's going to the matches, following them on social media, sharing, subscribing to their YouTube channels, listening to the podcast, because it's not just the men and women that are in the ring, but it's the podcasters out there too that are trying to make a crack at things. So I appreciate the support, and I hope that you all have a great week, and we will talk again soon.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.